Okay, good morning, good morning. Thank you everyone for coming. Such a nasty weather. Let me just get myself set up. Parshas Vayechi is of course the... How about if we go like this? It should work. Parshas Vayechi. The voice of God. Parshas Vayechi is of course the parsha that climaxes and resolves all the sibling rivalry and contentiousness, all the internecine struggle, all the frustration of selection and discarding which dominates the narrative of Sefer Bereishis. Finally, there's a group of people who have been selected for historical mission and historical challenge rather than a lone sibling being selected at the cost of a discarded sibling. So I thought it's appropriate to talk about Achdus, a cliched word, which if we're able to penetrate through that cliche, we may discover deeper opportunities and deeper challenges to articulate Achdus. Clichés hide an obscure meaning. The more we're able to penetrate them and displace them in place of authentic meaning, the more deeply we live those experiences. One of my great teachers was Rabbi Yehuda Amital, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in my yeshiva. I literally miss him on a daily basis. I think of him constantly. And he would force us to shatter cliches. We called it the art of counterintuition. I'll give you an example having nothing to do with today's shiur as a taster for today's shiur. He would tell us, you know how people say, at first I tried to change the world, and then when that proved too difficult, I focused on changing my family. And then when that was too elusive, I just contracted in and withdrew and focused on my own self-improvement. Everyone in this room has heard that cliche. So Rav Amital would raise his index finger and wipe it away. He'd say, shtuyot, shtuyot, shtuyot. That's not the way it happens, he would say. He says, what really happens is people first try to change themselves. When that's too difficult, they try to change the family. When that's too difficult, then they try to change the world. Thus is the emes. Gerecht, thus is the emes, right? My fourth grade teachers agree with me, isn't right? I did well. I want to get the A for an A minus. You're still getting an A minus, no? Okay, so weiter, weiter. What does Achdus really mean? Not the slogans, not the songs, not the banners. What does it mean to feel Achdus? How do you unfold that experience which captures our imagination is obviously so crucial to our national fitness. So Achdus has three levels, hence the title of this year. And I want to try to expound them. The first level of Achdus we could call moral toleration. People are different, not necessarily limited to the religious sphere. And as we say, we have to learn to play nice in the sandbox. Whether the sandbox is a municipal sandbox or an ideological sandbox. One day, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai walked into the room and queried his students, what is the most important trait for human behavior? What is the quintessential trait for religious excellence? Source number two. Tzur ru'u eizuhi derech yishara sheyidbak b'adam. So Rabbi Eliezer said, ayin tova, generosity. You build generosity when it's difficult. When you don't have and you deliver and you surrender resources you don't possess, that's generosity. My wife's excellent at it, I'm terrible. When you don't have and you just freely give, ayin tova, you're generous. Rav Shimon ben Yeshua Omer, chaver tov, friendship. Work at friendship. I teach boys, I also teach women. I don't have to teach women about friendship. I have to teach them other traits. Boys have no clue. Watching the football game together with a bag of potato chips is not friendship. It's called parallel play. Friendship is listening, sacrificing your needs, placing yourself in that person's shoes. I work hard. I work hard at being, trying myself to be a good friend. And also trying to ingrain that within young men. This friendship is one of the bulwarks of human character. We just read, Hakel Haro'eh Oseh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ro'i Lo Echsar. Ro'i means shepherd. It also means friend. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our friend. If you're a good friend, you're better able to build that component of your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one here can see the Ro'i Shalom. He's elusive. He's transcendent. He's inscrutable. But the more of your human relationships that you can overlay into that interface with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the deeper the relationship. So if you're a good spouse, you can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a spouse, Shir HaShirim. If you're a good friend, then you overlay those emotions. If you're loyal, then those emotions. So friendship, Chaver Tov. And then Rabbi Yossi said Shachin Tov, a good neighbor. Shachin Tov doesn't mean you don't play music too loud on July 4th, or you make sure to poop your scoop of your dog not to get on the neighbor's lawn. That would never have been suggested by Rabbi Yossi as the trait to make sure you curb your dog, or to make sure the barbecue grill doesn't get too smoky. Shachin Tov means whenever we share space, we have to learn how to share space respectfully with others. It's a metaphor, not a particular experience. It's a metaphor. Where do we share space? When we drive, we share space. We share the road. It's not our road. When we get caught in traffic, we feel our needs and our urgencies are important. Everyone else get out of the way. I have a meeting to make. I have a plane to catch. Do we drive respectfully? Do we drive courteously? We have Baruch Hashem 8 children. Kanan Har just came as 80 2 weeks ago. So, Baruch Hashem. So we have plenty. God, you can tell. You can attest. We have plenty of bedrooms in our home. That's kind of stable. Plenty of bedrooms in our home. We have one rule in our house. To the degree that we could maintain that rule gender-wise, it wasn't always easy in terms of the spacing. But the rule in our house is every single sibling has to share a room. No separate rooms. So that's an incredible way to teach space sharing. I can always tell the boy that walks into the base medrash and had his own room. He's assaulted by the roar of the base medrash. It takes him 4 weeks just to get his head screwed on this. I haven't trained myself to think in a world of noise and distraction and chaos and share space. And that's the world we occupy. And if your only performance excels only in tranquility and in moments of stillness, and you have limited arenas for successful operation and successful experience. And it works both ways. Part of davening is being courteous to the person davening next to you. Sometimes when I see these boys returning from Eretz Yisrael shaking with RPMs that rival sports cars, revolutions per minute, is that perhaps disturbing someone else's tefillah? How many times, not that I've been in the women's section, but it happens in the men's section as well, is a person that always sings the song but one octave different or three seconds behind their head because they have to hear themselves. It's really about themselves. They don't. And so much of our collective tefillah is melting into the tzibur and becoming anonymous. So the Beit Knesset is the arena for expressing Shachin Tov, just as the roadways and our room and any time else we share space with people. I've been on only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how many planes the last week and a half. And that's a place to share space. And I try to get up earlier than I would have to so I don't have to daven and inconvenience the person next to me, find it unfair to that person. Other ways to share space, to be courteous, to pick up, to help people put their bags away. But certainly when Shachin Tov is not just sharing municipal or experiential space, but ideological space, recognizing differences in ideology and we're passionate about those differences, but tolerating those differences, and from just a purely moral standpoint, from a menschlichtig standpoint, beyond any ideology, beyond any theology, this would be a mess. You could completely disagree. Spinoza could walk into the room right now. I don't imagine as much about Spinoza I would agree with. Treat him like a mensch. Treat him like a mensch. Karl Marx could walk in here. the Vilna Gaon of Kfira. Okay, treat him like a mensch. I remember Rav Lichtenstein once taught us this Mishnah, because I didn't quote the end part of the Mishnah. Rav Aaron once told us the story that he was walking in Shaarei Chesed. I'm sure you've all been to the community of Shaarei Chesed in Yerushalayim. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I also have the Social Society of Aaron Celebration. Baruch Hashem is a good name. It's a good name. Baron Akain. Shmos, right? Shmos. Good to know me. So anyway, he was walking in Shaarei Chesed. And he saw an Arab merchant pull his car suddenly to an abrupt halt. The back of the car flung open. All the food and produce and vegetables were strewn on the ground. And the yeshiva bachrim descended on the scene, wagging the finger, deliberating whether they had a chiyuv to help him collect his fruit. Because what status does the state of Israel have? And is Islam paganism? There's a halakha concept called ger koshav. A convert who isn't fully converted, who submitted to monotheism and lives under Jewish authority and sovereignty. So he has halakhic rights and benefits. So it's a very complex and intricate discussion surrounding the status of an Arab as a ger toshav. And Rav Aaron was just so saddened that here you had young men who were just so conversant in intricate details of halakha, but didn't have the basic decency to get down on their hands and knees. And we all beat our chests. Yes, Rebbe, give it to them. And then he bemoaned the fact that in our community, where we are able to instill menschlichkeit, hopefully, and compassion, sometimes our young men and women are totally ignorant of even the most basic details attendant to this issue. And why can't we create the perfect beast, he bemoaned? Why can't we create young men and women, menschlichkeit, compassion, sensitivity, education, erudition, piety? Why can't we have both? 3 seconds of silence descended. And then some boy in the back raised his hand and said, but Rebbe, if you could only have one, which would it be? With the flabbergasted. You don't ask Rav Aaron that question. We lived in mortal fear of this man. You know, it must have been some visitor from South Africa. I dare ask that question. And Rav Aaron looked and seen without missing a heartbeat. In a flash. I remember his voice resonating in my consciousness. If I could only have one, it would be Meshachar. If you only have one, it would be menschlichkeit. And he actually quoted this Mishnah to us because the conclusion of this contest for the most salient trait was Rav Elazar ben Hyrcanus, who brought down the house and said, forget Shachin Tov, forget Ayin Tov, forget, it's about being a Lev Tov, being a good heart. Sometimes girls approach me, either electronically or actually in Eretz Yisrael, and they say they're looking for a shidduch. Can I help them find a shidduch? So they come with their list. I want this, and I want this, and I want this. I don't want to be too dramatic here, but I basically take the list and I get the pieces. Forget the list. Find a husband with a loving heart. Just find a Ziskai, a loving person, and I promise you everything else will work out. And I paskin like lots of Americanists in the mission office. It's not like I'm such a kuiper, you know, how big his hat is, and how long his tzitzis is, this, you know, Mishnah is backwards, forwards, upside down. Elizabeth Erkin has said, if you have a good heart, everything will take care of itself. So that's the first level of Achdus. We're different from people, but we tolerate those differences just as at a menschlichkeit, at a share, or at the very least, not just morally, but pragmatically. How many mikvahs can we build? A one mikvah for every stripe. How many schools can we build? There's a small town, like obviously I'm not going to articulate, that has 2 schools now, a small town in the Midwest. Each has 15 children in it, boys and girls. At a certain point, diminishing returns. Pool your resources and provide better services. So it's not just moral sensibility, but pragmatic decision-making. And that's a first level, and the horror of this failure is on display in the second Beis HaMikdash. The failure of the first Beis HaMikdash was outsized and dramatic. Be careful. We live in a world with a tendency to glorify the past. The past was not as golden as our nostalgia presents it as such, or polishes them. Nostalgia basically takes old relics, polishes them, and makes them seem lustrous. That's the job of nostalgia. Oh, remember the great 70s? That's the role of nostalgia. The great yeshiva era. People speak about the great yeshivas, Volozhin and Slobodka. And how many boys were in these yeshivas? Maybe, max 6,000 boys. Maybe. There were 10 times as many boys who were off the derech. There are 6,000 boys alone right now sitting in Mir. So put things into perspective. There was a great era for those who were the beneficiaries of that very, very rarefied experience. It certainly wasn't universally enriching. It advanced intellectually. Intellectually, it was an exponential charge, but collectively, to a degree, Hasidus, which was less of an intellectual movement, had a broader popular appeal. There are many, many more people today who affirm because of Hasidus and because of the yeshiva world, even though most of us probably in this room are more part of the yeshiva world, the Lithuanian yeshiva world, as I am. The first Beis HaMikdash was a total catastrophe. Don't listen to what you hear. Avodah Zarah, Gila Arayos, Shvichus Damim. Murder, adultery, and paganism. They just recently discovered graves in Beit Shan, little idols little statues and graves and coffins. The second Beis HaMikdash was an entirely different story. It's unclear from Tanakh why the second Beis HaMikdash failed, because Tanakh had ended. The book of Tanakh had closed. So you don't have a chronicled record. The failure of the first Beis HaMikdash is chronicled through the rebukes and chastisements of the Nevi'im. Shut. Sure. Okay. Maybe. What am I now? I thought it'd be better this way. How's that? Okay. Let's start again, okay? Welcome. I saw you try to leave. You know? Okay. Okay. So the failures of the first Beis HaMikdash were obvious. Failures of the second Beis HaMikdash were less obvious because Tanakh had already concluded and there's no book chronicling the moral and religious failures. So very interesting nitziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. Ironically, the great Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin, not the founder of Volozhin, Chaim Volozhin founded Volozhin, but Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin was in the mid-19th century the personality, he and Reb Chaim were the personality, that second generation. Whenever I say that, I'm not in any way to compare, God forbid, but I feel as if our charge, my role in the yeshiva, and we're the second generation of my yeshiva, these great pioneers of Lichtenstein and Rahamital began this yeshiva, and now it's our responsibility as their successors to receive their heritage and perpetuate it and preserve it. So the Netziv was a second generation of Volozhin. And in his introduction to Sefer Bereishis, because Chazal had a nickname for every Sefer, they loved the Torah so much they gave it nicknames. Just like you love your child, your grandchild, you give them multiple nicknames. So the nickname for Sefer Shemos is Sefer Hagiulah, obviously, the Book of Redemption. The nickname for Vayikra is Taras Kohanim, the Laws of the Priests. The nickname of Bamidbar is Chumash HaPikudim, the Book of Numbers, because there's a census in the beginning, there's a census in the end, and those two censuses bracket the book, but are 40 years apart and display the tragedy of pre-fall and post-fall Jewish again. The first census is supernatural, it's an automatic. The second census is fallen. People have died, and now we have to recover the survivors before entering Eretz Yisrael. So the census in Bamidbar is the stylistic trope that holds the book together. Devarim is called Mishneh Torah, the repetition, the review. What is the nickname for Sefer Bereishis? Very good. In Kabbalistic terms, it's Sefer HaYetzirah, which we would expect, the Book of Creation. But Chazal called it Sefer HaYashar, or Sefer HaYisharim, the Book of nice people, kind people, people with integrity. Because continuously, consistently, every character displays integrity, kindness, flexibility of character, willingness to compromise, conciliatory approaches rather than militant aggression, rather than vituperative response. At every moment that there's a confrontation, someone steps aside. Abraham, Yitzhak in particular. And to contrast the conciliatory nature and the harmonious nature of these Yesharim, the Netziv in his introduction contrasts this with the environment of the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was zealous. The second Beis HaMikdash was ideological, thermodynamics. Everyone was very ideological. This was the era of ideology. Sound familiar? Everyone had their ideological camps. I'm this type of Jew. I'm that type of Jew. Because remember, we form ideological camps in response to historical urgencies. I can promise you, in 300 years, no one will know what modern Orthodoxy is or was. No one will know what Yeshivish is or was. No one will know what Kabbalah. These are collective responses to the Holocaust, the State of Israel, major events, that seismic shifts in Jewish identity. We had to formulate responses in camps. We're all Yidden. 300 years ago, your Bubbies, and the Haredi Bubbies, and the Yeshivish Bubbies, and the this Bubbies all sat together and started the week in the fields cutting grain. And my Zaidi and your Zaidi sell shmatas in a little marketplace. That was it. Because Jewish life was more or less frozen for 2,000 years in terms of new ideas. And then all of a sudden these great new events happen, and how do we process them? So this institution was built. What do we stand for when we rebuild Torah in America? We stand for Torah Oman. I can guarantee you in 100 years that will be something you'll Google and discover. Your grandchildren will go, what does Karamanda mean? Because it's not your identity. Your identity is learning Torah, davening, performing chesed, performing mitzvot. But that was the environment in the first and the second base of Mikdash. Let's just read a few lines of the Nitziv. The Nitziv writes, the Churban by Yesheni, line number two, the first source, the Churban by Yesheni, Shayadar Ikeshu Saltol, there was a perverted and crooked. There's a warped environment. Saltol comes from the word ptil. So I sit there's a called ptil, ptil tchelet, because you're taking two strings and you're twisting them around one another to create one string. Ptil tchelet. So, by the way, that's why tefillah comes from the same root, because you're connecting with Hashem. Like I'm taking two strings and creating one. Tefillah is meant to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is why Naphtali was referred to as Naphtali, because Naphtali, Phil, Tefillah, was the first child that Rachel had through her stepwife, Bilhah, so now she became similar to Leah. She became one with Leah. So Tefillah, Psil, Tzitzit, Naphtali, all come from the concept of intertwining two into one, but that could also be a corruption when it becomes perverted. So, as we would say, circuitous, I'm missing the word, what I would say, when something is angular and perverted. Serpentine. So, Dori Keshu Pataltal, Upirashi, line number three, Shayu Tzadikim V'chasidim. They were all righteous, Amalei Torah. They were steiging. They were stark. He is 21st century language. Ach lo hayu yasharin v'halichos olamim. They weren't yashars. They were tzadikim. They weren't yasharin. And what was the expression? They sinas schinam shebelibam. Line number four. They contempted each other in their hearts. Ze es ze. Line four. Chashtu es mi shero shenoek shelo kedaitem b'yiras Hashem. When they saw someone acting differently in Yiras Shamayim, they thought, Shutzduki the Apikoros, you must be a heretic, you must be a blasphemer. Uvala yidei zeh, lidei shvichus damim. Then they started to murder one another. The first fall was the ideological battles and the denigration and dismissal of others. And that led them to murder, hostility, and aggression, and to a total ideological and, of course, socio-religious collapse. And that's the failure which the Nitziv poses in contrast to the great triumph of our Avos. And by the way, I don't know your name. What's your name? Paulette. That's really the irony of switching Sefer HaYisharim for Sefer HaYitzira. God creates through metaphysics. Humans create through moral energy. So our Sefer HaYitzira is Sefer HaYasha. We don't have the capacity to spin the cosmos. We have the capacity to propel the cosmos through moral energy and moral activity. So for us, Sefer HaYisharim is the equivalent of Sefer HaYitzira. And that's why it has two names. That's the first level of Achdus. Moral, practical sensibility. Differences, we have to tolerate, live side by side, respect, Menschlichkeit. I believe that's typically most people's association with Achdus. The differences. I'm not a vicious Achasid. Ich bin ish a Chabatschka. I'm not a Chabatschka. But we have to share resources. But then there's a second madrega, a higher level of Achdus. That second madrega is not just tolerating, accommodating, morally, pragmatically pooling resources, but recognizing cross-pollination. Recognizing that there's so much that each community lends and adds to the other, that is simply beyond the limits of any one person and certainly of any one community. When people ask me, should I be a modern Orthodox Jew? Should I be a Dati Lumi Jew? Should I be a... Ignore all those labels. You should be a Yid. The way to ask your question is, which community do you want to raise your children in and raise your family? Okay, so I made a decision 25 years ago with my wife for 100 different reasons that Mrs. Kranzer told me to. No, what am I going to do? I'm going to raise my family in a Dati Lumi community. Do you know how much I have to compensate in that community? Even in Eretz Yisrael. Do you know how many ingredients I feel are missing from that definition? No communal mold is perfect. Communities pool resources, common agendas, and inevitably they fall short. No one community, sorry, no one person can accomplish all. Everyone take a look at the clock for a moment, or your watches. It's now 11:03.
And 40 seconds, 41, 42, 43, 44. In the last 5 seconds, they just published another sefer in Bnei Brak. Now, if you wait another 5 seconds, another sefer will be published. The prodigious and unparalleled production of Torah that the Haredi world in Eretz Yisrael is driving enriches us all. It enriches every single Torah lover. What an amazing, amazing, majestic trial of Torah knowledge and Torah productivity. And quite frankly, I don't have time for it. I'm too busy building a state and running an army and manning a police force and worrying about social welfare in Eretz Yisrael and trying to infuse our future state with a religious tone and advance redemption. I've got a lot on my plate. It's called apocalypse, redemption, messianism, state building. I try to learn as much as I can. I say I don't mean I personally, our community. But we divert resources. To me, I was raised in a yeshivish environment. I went to the Kamenetz, the Tarazavis Kamenetz. Somehow I ended up in Hezdi Yeshiva. But always suspicious. Is this the real thing? Is this the real thing? It doesn't look and feel real because there's no hats and the Rebbes aren't wearing ties and jackets and everything seems a little bit odd until I met 10 commanders who could quote shots on their fingertips. And then all of a sudden, it was real. But to be honest, for every one tank commander who can quote shots on his fingertips that I met in Gersh, if I'm honest, there are probably 10 of those in Bnei Brak because they're not manning tanks. And you have an entire community that's sloped exclusively towards Torah at all levels. I have two nicknames at home. For my children, they call me in Arabic slang. It's called Fadiha. Have you ever heard of Fadiha? Fadiha means you embarrass me, Abba. Fadiha. Abba, tafsik lefadecho tikvach. Fadiha. To my wife, it's even bigger nickname. It's called Shmigegi. Take them. Or sometimes we. You know, we have to take out the trash. That means me. We have to. Because I don't live in a world, in the Haredi world, the entire family is sloped towards one thing. Father sitting in Kollel, learning Yom Halayla, and the women absorb the entire domestic burden. Gleefully and willfully. And amazing women. Amazing women. I'm sure you know that. But that is an entire community, carefully coordinated, to produce Torah at unprecedented levels. I'm just amazed by it. And my life is altered by it and enriched by it. I don't just tolerate them. I'm thrilled. If I'm assembling an orchestra, would you only have violins? Or would you want to include some flutes, some percussion instruments? Isn't the variety important to create a richer and fuller experience? And if I were giving shiur in Lakewood this morning, my next stop, I would remind them that all this prodigious Torah activity is a product of a state that doesn't just support it financially, but creates Jewish identity, Jewish pride. Torah is always driven by Jewish identity. That is our cultural expression. Komamiosli artseinu. The fact that we have a people and a land and a state and a home is why we're here now. Do you know where your grandparents were? December 27th, 1815 or December 27th, 1615 or December 20th. You know where your grandparents are. You're sitting here beautiful, drinking coffee, enjoying Torah, enjoying jokes. Your grandparents, 200 years ago, were recovering from the pogrom that happened 2 days ago, whose ferocity would be in direct proportion to the vituperative nature of the shmooze that the priest gave at Christmas. If it was particularly anti-Semitic, there'd be 1,000 people killed, and if it was temperate, then there'd only be 500 maimed. So everything that we are, Baruch Hashem, enjoying is a product of we have returned to history, we have our state, we have our pride, we have our wealth, we have our national backbone. And one expression is Lakewood Meir Panovich. Remember a couple of years ago, I was invited to speak in South Africa at an event called the Sinai Indaba. Indaba, in African, means gathering. So they had a Sinai Indaba. It was an amazing event. 4,000 people came. And I was debating, I was a representative of the National Religious Camp, and I was debating with Jonathan Rosenblum, who was a correspondent of the Jerusalem Post, who writes about the Haredi sector. And Chief Rabbi Goldstein was the moderator. So we asked us each for our opening remarks, and in his opening remarks, Jonathan Rosenblum praised and flattered the National Religious Community. And in my opening remarks, I lathered up how much I enjoy the Haredi community. At which point the moderator said, we didn't fly you to South Africa for a love fest. Start fighting, start arguing. Anyway, it was a beautiful Kiddush Hashem. It was just absolutely everything you'd want. And everyone walked away. More than any content or any one line that was stated, just the fact that we stood there expressing, and it wasn't artificial. Totally, it was natural and organic. So I had a lineup of yeshiva bachurim from here to Cape Town. Rebbe, you've got to ask me, because they had never heard a dati lo mi rav express such emulation for that community and express it in their own fashion, so one by one. So they said, but tell us. I know, I understand there are differences, and each difference is important, but tell us. Tell us really, he said. There's one thing about which there's no wiggle room. The state of Israel. Don't back out to the different approaches. Either it is Yad Hashem or it's not Yad Hashem. Either it is the beginning of redemption or it isn't. Right? And don't give up. There's multiple approaches. I said, listen carefully. First of all, Reishit Tzmichat Gulateinu. You know when Reishit Tzmichat Gulateinu began? The moment the last Jew walked out of Yerushalayim after the Romans destroyed and performed the first mitzvah. Because Tzmichat Gulateinu is a train of mitzvos and tfilos and chesed. So the moment the first mitzvah was performed after Churban was completed, that was Reishit Tzmichat Gulateinu. Now, the debate is whether in 1948 the art continued because more people bowed in than learned. All of a sudden, the trajectory left focus. That's the entire debate. Is 1948 a mathematical increment or an exponential increment? He says, let me tell you how you should view 1948, and then I'll tell you how I view 1948. In your mind, the only way that we'll accomplish Geula is the expansion of Torah. But in order for Torah to be studied, someone has to support Torah and build a country. So in your mind, Hashem has to deceive half of the population into thinking that it's really Geula, so that they'll build a state and support your learning. So for your Torah to be learned, Hashem has to fool half the population. So I'm the fool. I'm wrong. Hashem has to fool me so that you can study Torah. Because if I want to be fooled, I want to serve in the army, I want to study Torah. Well, that's all I want to do is study Torah. Why am I spending my time wasting my things? And from my mind, we also need Torah to fuel this process. So from my mind, I shouldn't have to fool you into thinking it's not Reishit Tzmichat Gulateinu, so you won't go to the army and you'll study Torah while I'm busy. So I shouldn't have to fool some of the population in order to create that whole. And that's the difference. Who's the fool? The answer is no one's the fool. And that's what's on display in Parshas Vayechi. Not just that brothers tolerate each other, but that they cross-pollinate each other. I don't encourage the Yaakov strategy on Me'av Yisrim when anyone in this room passes away. I encourage you to invite each child into the room for a quiet personal conversation, especially if you plan on chastising them. Yaakov has harsh words for Reuven. Yaakov berates Shimon. You can imagine it's quite mortifying and better done in private. You don't hang your dirty laundry in public. But he wants them in unison, and he stresses this. Source number 3, Vayikra Yaakov al Banav, Hey Asvu V'Agida Lachem, Hey Asvu, gather. Eisa Sheyikra Eschem, source number 3, line 2, He Kabsu V'Shimu, gather. Two words, Hey Asvu V'Kabsu. And then an amazing, amazing pasuk appears 26 psukim later, after they convene, and after all the brachos have been delivered, source 3, last four words of source 3, Ish asher kibir chaso birech osam. That's a totally redundant phrase. Ish asher kibir chaso birech osam. That means nothing. Each was given their bracha. That's a redundant, superfluous statement. So of course, Chazal are on the lookout for superfluous statements because they carry coded meaning. Ish asher kibir chaso, the Medrash says, line number, source 4, line 2, Ma Talmud Lomar, Ish Asher Kibir Chosel Berech Osam? Lefi Shebirchan Yehuda Ba'aryeh, Yehuda got the strength of a lion, Dan Benachash, Gan got the wiliness of a Nachash, Naphtali Ayala, Binyamin, they were each given animal-like traits. Source number 4, line 3, Chazar V'Kololam Kulan Kiechad. After distributing separate brachos, Yaakov then collectively distributed all the brachos to all the tribes. Asan, line number 4, source 4, Arayot, everyone became an Ari. Asan, the Chashim, everyone had the traits of the Nachash. And he quotes, the Medrash quotes a pasuk from Devarim, in which Dan is not referred to as a nachash, but like an Aryeh. It's not that Yaakov shuffled the deck. If he was planning on shuffling the deck, why split it to begin with? Why hand out one card to Yehuda, one card to Dan, one card to Levi, one card, and then shuffle and say, well, everyone gets all the cards. Everyone gets their card. But if it's a symphony and a harmony, then by definition, everyone's an Aryeh, and everyone's a Nachash, and everyone's everyone. By definition, we pollinate each other, so your traits enrich mine, my traits enrich yours, and together we create that collective called Knesset Yisrael that is the closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on human terms. See, typically human beings are binary. We process singular truths. It's either day or night. Right now it's day, it's not night. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yotzer Or, Uvarei Choshech. So for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he can encompass experiences which to us appear as contradictory or discordant. In Kabbalah, that phrase is called kol, encompassing. And that's a phrase which is only applied to two entities, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by definition, and to Am Yisrael. The only human being who got close to that level, Chazal tell us, was Abraham. The Abraham Zakein Baba Yamim, Hashem Berachas Abraham Bakol, in Kabbalah, he glimpsed the ability to integrate seemingly discordant, incongruent ideas and see them as one. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can ultimately, but as a collective we can, because we're different. And so diversity is not just the miscarriage or misfortune that has to be tolerated. Diversity is pre-programmed. Diversity is downloaded consciously. Which is why the Gemara in Brachos informs us that if you see 600,000 Yidden, one of the amazing, it's going to sound strange, one of the amazing privileges of living in Eretz Yisrael is that we now have been, privilege is a hard word, but we now have been invited to mass funerals. There were 800,000 Jews at the funeral of Rav Avadya Yosef. There were 450 of Shlomo Zalman. You never had funerals of this size. My Zaidi told me stories about the Chafetz Chaim's funeral, which was chronicled in the New York Times. He told me you could hear the crying miles away, which I, to this day, don't understand what that means. I assumed there was personification, not personality. He was crying, so he was projecting it on everyone around him. By how many people do you think attended the Chafetz Chaim's Levaya? Impossible to know, but I can't imagine. How many people could make it on the trains and horse and buggies from all over scattered Europe? Today you climb on a bus in Petah Tikva and you shall light. You climb on a bus, so we have. There were people who actually recited this bracha upon seeing. There's a special bracha you recite if you see 600,000 Jews. Could you imagine for thousands of years people read this Gemara and they just couldn't even imagine that reality? They could only envision it in messianic terms. What does it mean to see 600,000 Jews when you're living in a shtetl of 2,000? Or in a large town of 50,000? Or 100,000 even? All of a sudden. So people actually recited the bracha, and according to some shittos, you can only recite this bracha if you see all 600,000 at once. So some people hired helicopters, come up into the air, and looked down at 600,000 people. And then they went bungee jumping. They recited the bracha. That would be my perfect day. Go up, take a bracha, take a bunch of them. In Tam Yisrael, like metaphoric. But recite the bracha. So what's the bracha? You're sitting there, Har Sinai. You're reliving the greatest event in human history. What bracha do you recite? Source number 5, Amar Hamuna, Haroa, Ochlusi Yisrael. You see 600,000 people, you make the bracha. Baruch Chacham Arazim. Line 2. Kodesh Baruch Hu, only you could pull this off. Only you are intelligent enough. Only you are wise enough. But what aspect of this gathering is uniquely divine? She'ain, line number 2, source 5. Datam domam zelazet. Their views are different. The ain partsufein domam zelazet. Just like they look different, they think differently. This is not mourning. This is celebrating. This is not a tisha b'av kina. I wish everyone were the same, but too bad. They're different. This is a bracha. You're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Isn't it valuable that people look different? Imagine a world in which we all look the same. No one would get married. No one would feel passion. Isn't it healthy that there are differences, not just of look, but of also desires? There's a market that's driven by diverse interests. So we're saying, just like you created diversity that drives marriages, families, passion, relationships. Similarly, you created different viewpoints. And only you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could mint man genetically similar, but with different characteristics, traits, beliefs, and views. So we actually crave diversity. We don't tolerate it. We crave it. And we cultivate it. As human beings, the more that we cultivate diversity within the range of obviously orthodox behavior, the more we're like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Moshe Rabbeinu is terrified about his demise, and his first concern is who will his successor be? Source number 6, Yifgod Hashem, line number 1, source 6, Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar, a strange way to refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yifgod Hashem Mali Rachamim, Yifgod Hashem Agadol V'Hanorah. Why does Moshe at this moment introduce a whole new moniker, a whole new nickname for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar? So Rashi sends it. Rashi quotes the Medrash. We'll read it from Rashi. Lama Nemar Amar L'fanav Rebona Shalolam Golev Yadua L'fanecha Daito Shokol Echa B'echa In Dovim Shalosah. People are different. Manei Aleihem Manig, find the leader. She Sovel Kol Echa V'echa L'fi Daito, that's able to tolerate and cultivate differences. That's real leadership. You're the okay of Ruchos. You created Ruchos. Ruchos Shalzeh Ain't Akin Ruchos Shalzeh. Ruchos Shalzeh, you are the okay of Ruchos. Now let's locate an Isha Ruchos. Now let's locate a true leader who doesn't just tolerate, but cultivates. Because that's where stardom lies. Not by submitting or abdicating your identity. Because after all, religion is abdication. Religion is submission. We're all called to submit to a larger series of mitzvahs and beliefs. But how do you submit without abdicating that core identity that has so much potential? And if you abdicate that, then your religious experience becomes listless and lifeless rather than profound and vibrant. That's really the trick of a Lotus Hashem. To tease that median between submission and creativity, between the you and the abnegation of you. And conformity sometimes pushes people over the precipice. And they lose themselves. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes out on the raw end because all the kochos that he gave you are lost to the assembly line of ideology. We just punch out for people. I mentioned Rav Amital, so when he started the yeshiva, so the Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, why do you need another yeshiva? 1968, there's so many yeshivas. Another yeshiva in 1968. Said, well, let me tell you the following story about a chassid who got caught stealing, and he was thrown into jail. And they called the Rebbe. And the Rebbe came in, calmed him down, placated him, assuaged, took him out of jail. 3 months later, the same chassid gets tossed into jail for stealing. They called the Rebbe, okay, evidently you're frail, you're weak, I'm also frail, I'm also weak, I have my own frustrations in life. Takes the chassid out of jail, rehabilitates him. A few weeks later, the same chassid, tossed in jail, caught hand in the cookie jar, shoplifting. Call the Rebbe. The Rebbe comes in, and he's sitting there crying, the chassid, I don't know, Rebbe, I'm trying so hard. He says, okay, I know life's hard, I also have difficulties. Puts his arm around him, takes him out of the jail cell. At some point, the Rebbe does. So the son succeeds the Rebbe. A few months after the Levaya, the same chassid, the poor little chassid, gets caught stealing a fourth time, gets tossed into the jail cell, call the Rebbe. The Rebbe is saying, Rebbe's no longer here. Call the son. So the son comes walking into the jail cell and lambasts this chassid, you're a disgrace to my father's legacy, how dare you insult him, he was there for you, and you dare, a few months after the Levaya, to disgrace his legacy by betraying his confidence and his trust, rot in jail for a few hours, and then maybe we'll see about bailing you out. So this poor chassid breaks down in tears. He says, you understand something? He says, I'm not a tzaddik. I'm a rasha. I don't need a rebbe for tzaddikim. I need a rebbe for a shayim. I'm not a tzaddik. I'm a rasha. I don't need you. He says, you're a good rebbe for tzaddikim. I need a rebbe for a shayim. Your father, he was a rebbe for a shayim. Rav Amital told us, there are plenty of yeshivas for tzaddikim. I want to start a yeshiva for a shayach. We need a yeshiva for a shayach. We all start cracking up, and he said, Hashem got me back and said, and gave me tzaddikim. The only thing Rav Amital ever told me about my job, never guided me, never forced my hand, the only thing he told me, he called me in the first day I started working in 1995 and said, do whatever you'd like, I trust you. But whatever you do, don't listen to the tzaddikim of the yeshiva. Every yeshiva has those 21-year-old outdoor bachurim who know exactly what should be done, and they're going to make the changes and do this, and 21-year-old swamis who know the secrets of the universe. You stick to your course. You implement educational strategies you see fit without cowering to the zealousness of 22-year-olds. And that's the second madriga of Achdus. Not just tolerating, but emulating, appreciating, cross-pollinating, enriching, mutual enrichment. And to a degree, it's also beyond Frumkeit. I interview boys for the yeshiva. This is one of the questions I ask them. After they've read the Gemara and the Tosfos, and they tell me about their davening, okay, now I want you to tell me the most impressive Jew you've ever met, one second, who's not pro. I want to see if they can identify Judaism independent of ritual. Because so much about our Avodas Hashem is just being a good Yid. And unless you're able to sever it from ritual, you don't invest in it. It just gets swept up with the Gemara and Habakkuk's Neris. Who is the best Jew you've met who isn't from? In a second, Menachem Begin. That's an easy one for me. This man stepped right out of Tanakh. Yeah, he was from, wasn't he? That's not the issue. People like that who we've met who were just such great Yidden. And I'm sure every one of you could come up with an individual that you know that's such a spectacular Yidden. And that's what it's from, guys. It's not just tolerating the visions of Hasidim. We're in YU and they're in visions. It's also about recognizing traits. And to a degree, that's the difference of Kiruv in America and in Eretz Yisrael. Kiruv in America is unidirectional. Let's go be Makarot there. Kiruv in Eretz Yisrael, so let's live together and see what we can jointly understand about one another. So my son is in a Hezbollah yeshiva in a city called Yerucham, which is the yeshiva that is attempting to rehabilitate an underdeveloped development town of the 50s. And every person there, to a man who's gone there to be Makarev, says, we're here to learn. And in a real way, there are a lot of Masara, T, Svardim, traditional Svardim who live there. And you would be surprised how much your average entitled North American high school boy from MTA can learn from a non-Frum Svardi about Kibbutz Avayim. You'd be shocked. Or not so shocked. Or about Hachnasas Arachim. So here of an Eretz Yisrael is unidirectional, and that's what makes it so successful, because there isn't this sense of condescension and preaching and proselytizing. Rather, we're one people, we've been scattered for thousands of years, we each have preserved certain shards of that experience, and now let's rebuild the mosaic through these shattered pieces of glass. But then there's a higher form of achdus, and I have to end in a few minutes, I apologize, maybe a few extra minutes, but not much more. And it's not moral or practical, the first level is achdus. And it certainly isn't cross-pollination or self-mutual enrichment. It's something even more surpassing. It's the highest form of achdus. The Gemara in Tainus says that in the end of days, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will align the tzaddikim in a circle. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu will inhabit the midpoint of that circle. And the tzaddikim will be aligned along the perimeter. And they'll all point to the midpoint of the circle and announce, Zeh Hashem, kivinu lo, nagila v'nismacha b'shua sof. We waited for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now we see Him. Why is the final alignment of tzaddikim compared to a circle? Not a triangle, not a square, not a rectangle. What makes a circle geometrically unique? Infinite equidistant radii. You can draw an infinite amount of radii in a circle and they have infinite equidistance. So for argument's sake, let's say this is the circle of tzaddikim and everyone in this room is at this point of the circle. And a bel zechassid, let's say, is at this point of the circle. You and that bel zechassid are seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu from 180 diametrically opposed angles. You're seeing different Avodas Hashem almost. But you were distant because no human being can grasp the totality of Kutchabrahu. It's all fractional. No human being can grasp the totality. By definition, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is inscrutable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unfathomable. No one person can grasp the totality. So we stand in our circle along the perimeter and we see as much as we can. And sometimes those visions are different by degrees. Sometimes they're diametrically different. As long as they cohere within that circle of what we roughly describe as orthodoxy, without getting into that discussion at this stage, you're equidistant. You may show up in Gan Eden and have a Belz Chassid as your roommate. And no changing roommates in Shabbat. Wherever you get assigned, that's your roommate. And they tell a joke about a person that goes to Shemayim. And the Malach comes to greet him and says, welcome to Gan Eden. You can choose one of three rooms. You can have your choice. He takes him to the first room, opens the door, shows him inside. People are eating, drinking, singing Zmiro, saying Divrei Torah. Takes him to door number two, opens the door, eating, singing Zmiro, Divrei Torah. Great. The Malach says, I'll show you your third option, but be careful. I'm only going to open the door for a second. You have to be absolutely silent. You can only see for a second. Take a quick glimpse and shut the door as quickly as possible. Okay. Malach says to him, you ready? You ready. On my count. One, two, three. Opens and closes. In that split second, this person sees that third room. They're eating, drinking, seeing the mirror, seeing the guitar. He turns to Malach and says, I've got to ask you something. Why all the melodrama? Why the soap opera? No, that's the room for people. We don't want to disturb the naivete. That's the room for people that think they're the only people in Shemayim. We don't want to ruin it for them. They're going to ruin their grenade. Yeah, so let them be still. The assertion, these two words, any person who uses these two words, I encourage you to use the door. By using either of these two words seriously, I use them as jokes, but if you use them seriously, that is a total ignorance of Avodas Hashem. You ready? This is the Derech. It doesn't exist by definition for a human being to articulate the Derech of a Ribbon Kadosh Himmel. How ignorant is that person? You in your mortal mind are able to articulate the Derech that Moshe Rabbeinu could hardly scale the Yerani Adam Bechai? Because you had great Rebbe. I also had great Rebbe. And he also had great Rebbe. You think a machlokus in the Gemara is because of a disintegration of the Masara? Hashem and Har Sinai said one thing, and for hundreds of years they remembered that one truth, and because of laziness and indolence they forgot, and Hillel thought one way? And Har Sinai, Kodesh Baruch Hu, held this up and said, this is Tahor. And there are 49 ways to justify that conclusion. And this is also Tameh, and there are 49 ways to justify. And in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's non-binary mind, those two truths can be integrated in ways that we can't understand. Niels Bohr was a Dutch physicist. Niels Bohr once said, the opposite of a true statement is a false statement. The opposite of a profound statement is another profound statement. HaKadosh Baruch Hu issues profundities. And for hundreds of years, we knew Torah so well. We knew Torah so tenaciously that we're able to take these seemingly incongruent ideas and meld them into one. As we grew up, we were able to do that more skillfully. At a certain point, we lost that scent. We lost that ability, so these splinter truths that once could be easier integrated could no longer be infused. So people could only develop and generate their own personal truths, and hence machlokas erupted. And even practically, halacha. If you lived in 1520, and you lived in France, you made kiddush one way. You lived in, like a Vedic town. If you lived in Spain, you made kiddush like the Ramban. Or the Rambam, depending on which part of Spain you lived in. And then the Shulchan Aruch was written. Because of two great events, the traumatizing halachic process, the Inquisition, the printing process, so halacha had to be standardized. That's the truth. That's the emes, really. So that derech, dangerous word, and even more dangerous is the emes. This is the emes. Ooh, that word scares me. It's mamashna marasis. Mamashna. The way to say it is, this is my derech. This is how my Rebbeim taught me to learn. This is how my Rebbeim taught me to learn HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you feel it's appropriate for you, I want to teach you and infuse it with the passion. This is my Derech. This is my Derech HaLimud. This is my AMS. Because that's the challenge of passion. You become so passionate about something, you lose your ration. You want to feel that that's the only AMS, because you want to feel so passionate. You ask me who the most beautiful woman in the world is. Okay, you say my wife. Now, okay, but rationally, are there other pretty? Okay, but doesn't make a difference. I hate chocolate ice cream with a passion. I cannot eat chocolate ice cream. I'm a vanilla fan. I'm passionate about vanilla ice cream. Can I imagine that other people like chocolate? Rational? Okay, rational. But passion is not. How could you like chocolate ice cream? We'll try to bring some of that mental elasticity or imaginative elasticity to the way you do HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So real achdus is not, I tolerate, or I need. Real achdus, I realize it as I stand in front of Kutcha Birbal, trying to scale my way towards closer intimacy and knowledge and understanding and comprehension. It is completely impossible. And there are others who are scaling their way within the circle. And it will come up with different distillations, different complexions. It's just as MS. It's just as MS. And that is why, when the boys gathered around the bed for this moment of unity, it wasn't a unity because they were all Jets fans. It wasn't a unity because they all liked Egyptian Chinese food. It was all unity, and they recited the first recital, I guess with this will end, the first recital, source number 14, Amma Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Yaakov was concerned, perhaps there are some who have been discarded, who have fallen off the ideological precipice. Shema Yesh Chas V'Shalom, source 14, line 2. P'sul B'Misasi, maybe there are people in Mi'itati. Amru Lo Bana, they say, Shema Yisrael Hashem. They're speaking to Yaakov, Shema Yisrael, they're talking to the father. Hashem is the first recital of Shema. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Their unity is conferred by the encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is a deliberate unity, because they're so humble by recognizing the limits of human capacity when overwhelmed by the divine majesty that they become unified in humility by recognizing he sees different, Yehud as his, Yosef as his, Benjamin as his, and Dan as his. So they recite Shema Yisrael, which is why it's so important. Al Pi Halacha, we try to recite Shema together in Shul. Al Pi Halacha, we should try to listen to the Shvech Tibor, who raises the voice and says Shema, because when we encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unity and unfathomability, and we realize we can't fully comprehend them, so then that's the highest form of unity. And by the way, that's our challenge, because our purpose in this world is to assert HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unity. That's the message of Moses. I don't know about you, and please don't tell the people who run Kol Yom Rishon that I said this. Right, maybe it's my last time invited back to Yom Rishon. I traveled on planes this week to airports. I said Merry Christmas to every single person I saw with gusto. Favas. How would I say that? Because this is the world we re-landscape. Because 2,000 years ago, they weren't celebrating Christmas. They were cannibalizing each other's flesh and sacrificing virgins on pagan altars. And we created monotheism. And we disseminated monotheism against all odds. Is Christianity pure monotheism? Of course not. It still has vestigial paganism. Is Islam pure monotheism? Maybe theologically, but the militantism is corrupting it. But this is our world. The fact that Christians are celebrating more or less a monotheistic holiday, more or less, rather than worshipping planets and sea gods, rather than incinerating smoke and creating incense and all sorts of magic voodoo. I'm proud of Christmas. Now, maybe it's because I live in Israel and I don't have to hear the jingles and see the advertisements. But the fact that Christians celebrated Christmas means that they are more or less pushing their way towards our monotheistic agenda. That's ours. But if we are meant to assert that bold statement that the world is division, because that's how the world presents itself to us, is divided. Different people, different forces. If you landed in India tonight, in Bombay, you would discover 33 million gods. One god for every condition of the human experience, for every emotion, for every force of nature. We live in a world that presents as divided, and we have spun the notion of a unified, indivisible force, a unified, indivisible entity that created everything that seems different, good and evil, different people. That's our message. But you know how we deliver that message most emphatically? If we are one. If we are one, then we reflect His unity. So we recite Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. But that pasuk has a cousin. What does it mean for a pasuk to have a cousin? It shares the same DNA. Which pasuk is a cousin for Shema? What does Hashem put in His tefillin? Mi, Kiamcha, Yisrael,
goy echad ba'aretz. If I am to be Hashem echad, I need you to be goy echad. Because you have to convince the world that differences can come from unity. So if you really experience achdus, that's not just a social program, that's a theological triumph. Because you now have reshaped yourselves and your communities in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, differences that are spun from unity. So that's why I want to hear the achdus song. I want to make sure there's content also. Three levels of achdus. Number one, we tolerate, we appreciate, morally and pragmatically. Number two, we emulate and we covet, we make contributions, all the enrichments that lie beyond our ken, as people and as communities, beyond our reach. And more importantly, as we stand in front of Kutcher Brick, if we're honest with ourselves, to stand in front of Kutcher Brick, we do not arrogate to ourselves the cockiness or the confidence that we can encompass the totality of our Kutcher Brick. It's morally repugnant and it's intellectually bankrupt. We accomplish what we can. We grasp what we can. He grasps and she grasps what he can or she can. And even if I can't understand it, the very fact that I don't understand it affirms the fact that I'm truly seeing Hashem. Because if I think I'm seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then I'm seeing a paganized version. If I know I don't know, then I know. For me to walk into Mir and spend the morning in Mir isn't important. Because in Mir, more or less, they're behaving the same way they behave in Gush or they behave in YU. They're learning Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Davening, Musar. For me to walk into Sons, it's even more important. Because I imagine, having walked into Sons recently, imagine there may be events though, that I try to stretch my mind as much as I can. There may be events that I can't make sense of as hard as I try. That's seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, seeing the parts of Hashem you can't see, you can't appreciate, because of your limited imagination. So it's more important to encounter the parts of Yiddishkeit that you don't understand, because if you think you understand Hashem, you don't. If you know you don't understand, ironically, then you understand more than that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yiddish Hashem, we should see each other, Yishalayim. There's only one kotel, the last I checked, and we're all going to be standing there together, side by side. So Baruch Hashem, we'll see you in Eretz Yisrael, and after.